This is Men's Health Live from Men's Health Magazine.
There's a lot of very upset people here in the Men's Health Live radio studio. We are Men's Health Live. I'm Greg Stebbin. I'm here with Eric Spitznagel, Andrew Daniels.
Hello.
And Men's Health Live is brought to you by Craftsman, America's most trusted tool brand made to make. And there are just a lot of upset people here today.
Why are we upset, Greg?
We're upset about irrational things. Craig. I mean, like, very rational things.
I'm feeling pretty good.
I feel okay, too.
Yourself.
I thought the football season was over.
Oh, that's very different than depressed.
Oh, what is it?
Upset, upset is what my three-year-old is
for.
When he has to go to bed.
Wow. You've got nothing to live for.
I mean, the draft, but that's what, April?
3 months away.
Yeah,
that's come too
on.
Long.
I don't know.
March Madness we got coming out.
Yeah, we are in the NBA, you know. And then Valentine's Day is coming up. You know, that's such a...
We're going to talk about...
Yeah, you know, excited is a different word, too. I have some opinions on Valentine's Day. But, you know, you get that high from the Super Bowl, and then it's like, oh, Valentine's Day.
You see, you go from football to love.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah, depressing.
It's from football to sex, and I get excited about that.
You associate Valentine's Day with sex.
Good for you for having sex on Valentine's Day.
Everything with sex.
You associate everything, so you were watching the Super Bowl going, oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, Katy Perry.
Look at that shark.
Look at it. Whoa. That was a
wide ad. Got me all
that was
excited.
Such a stupid play. That turns me on. So what is your opinion quickly, Paul, on Valentine's Day? Could you sum it up in a...
I mean, it's nice to feel warm and fuzzy, right? But, like, honestly, you know, I've always thought that, you know, it's nice for the couple to spend some time together, right? But, you know, I live with my fiance right now. We spend all this time together.
Yeah.
So our solution...
Maybe you spend Valentine's Day apart.
Right? Like
Whoa.
That.
Like that.
See?
Yes.
Now that's
maybe
an interesting
we have to plan
thought.
A, like, man trip.
So, like, call it I Love You, Honey, But Not Right Now Day.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And maybe, like, the goal is to see, like, how much you end up missing each other.
That
like,
is very interesting.
That's
a great idea.
Yeah.
Or the goal is just to download a lot of porn because she's
just
gone
go to town.
For the weekend.
Go to town.
Do you think we can sell Hallmark on that?
See.
So where are we sending our wives for anti-Valentine's Day? I love this idea.
I'm sure my wife has many ideas about where she would get the hell out of it. It's like,
answer.
Oh, I'm get access to the, yeah, okay, yeah, see you later. Good luck with the kid. Dun-dun!
Well, so just so you know, coming up later in the show, we're going to talk with a gentleman by the name of Tim Dowling, who wrote for Men's Health many years ago. He has a new book out called How to Be a Husband. And we're going to talk with him about Valentine's Day and stuff like that. So let's just leave it aside for now. I think we've covered it enough for a while.
That's fair.
Let's get back to this football thing. I mean, there's other sports, Paul.
No, there's no other sport. At least not one that I get excited about. Well, baseball's still far away off. And the NBA playoffs
are 17 days. I mean, I've been counting down.
You know, it's all that, like, just red tape that's associated with sports now, like waiting for drafts and, you know, the pitchers and catchers report, like, man.
It's the little things you got to get excited about.
Yeah, I'd rather watch, like, you know, outfield grass grow. But, yeah, when football season is gone, I also find I have a hole in my morning routine. Like, usually I get up, I get excited, like, okay, what's the big news from the Bengals today? And that's part of, like, you know, I go to New York Times, I go to the local paper, I go to Google News Bengals report. And now it's like, geez.
Yeah, but you don't like keeping up with, like, the four arrests that happen every day. Like, just yesterday, there was, like, a solicitation arrest. There was a dude from the Ravens who was arrested for illegally owning an alligator, which is, like, my favorite arrest in the entire world.
And that doesn't have a season.
No.
That happens all year long.
Right, but it just seems like since it's relevant, like the first day of the offseason was this, like, horrible day for the NFL, which is really keeping a theme with the horrible year that they've had.
Yeah.
But I just – it's kind of funny. So there's – it is the league that never sleeps. So while there might not be, like, actual action on the field, you can enjoy the off the field arrests just as much.
So anybody have anything they want to say about the game? Because we're never going to talk about it again until next season.
The game in general of football or the Super Bowl?
The game of the Super Bowl.
Greatest Super Bowl of all time.
Really?
At least like a Tarantino movie at the end.
Top five? Yeah, absolutely.
It was crazy.
At least since I've been alive. I thought the halftime show left a little to be desired.
Yeah.
In the area of things to be desired.
Yes.
You know, I thought things were a little covered up, so to speak.
It was one of the top top halftime shows in terms of giant lion writing.
Yes.
It was probably the at least within the top five of them.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, like, Super Bowl was great. The commercials, I think, were like everyone, you know, got in a tizzy about, like, the dead kid from the Nationwide ad.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I don't have kids.
There's only one guy in the studio with a kid. I mean, what did you catch it the first time around? Or did you
caught it.
Were you a little surprised by the Sixth Sense ending there?
All the ways you could kill your kill your son.
Oh, did it make me paranoid? Yes, it was effectively made me baby-proof the house again for the second time.
When we come back, we might talk about the Nationwide ad a little bit more, but we have so many more interesting things to talk about, like how much we hate the song Happy Birthday.
Yes!
and you, because there's millions of you having birthdays today.
Don't sing any more of it.
Okay, all singing is done by Eric. We'll be right back.
Barrett Jackson, the world's greatest collector car auction, returns to South Florida Fairgrounds in Palm Beach, Florida, April 17th through the 19th. Hundreds of amazing vehicles will once again cross the auction block. Be a part of the three-day lifestyle event and the energy that is Barrett Jackson. That's April 17th through the 19th at the beautiful, sunny South Florida Fairgrounds. Tickets are available at Barrett-Jackson.com. That's Barrett-Jackson.com.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live from the world's best-selling men's lifestyle magazine, Men's Health.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live. We're the guys from Men's Health Magazine and...
And what else?
And,
and happy birthday to...
Hey, be cool. Not allowed.
Did that sound as scripted as it actually was? Interestingly, I couldn't finish the song Happy Birthday without being dragged to court. Andrew, could you explain why that is?
I certainly can. Okay, so you got to understand that yesterday was all about the birthday. It was Facebook's birthday this past week.
So was it 10, 11?
I think it turned 11 years old.
As if that's a real thing.
I'm sorry. Right, I mean, okay.
We celebrate
the birthday or Facebook?
Which knows of the listen.
Okay.
So we celebrate birthdays of things that are alive?
Yeah, it got us kind of searching down the birthday trail. We fell down.
So technically it's really an anniversary, isn't it?
That's true. Yeah, okay. But anyway, semantics. Yeah. Okay. So we fell down the
birthday. Well, we are magazine editors, so it seems like semantics are kind of important.
We fell down the birthday the rabbit hole. So one of the first things I found out about the song Happy Birthday to You is that for some inexplicable reason, it is the most searched song on Google.
Because people forget the words?
Do people forget the words? Are we looking at the lyrics? I just don't understand why that is.
Why would anyone go like, it goes Happy Birthday to...
Oh,
shoot. How does that go? Google it. Just Google it.
And when you Google it, it never says to Greg.
No. Are they looking for the sheet music? I mean, what is Googleable about Happy Birthday to You?
So I brought up this crazy, perplexing fact in a pitch meeting yesterday, and we all decided, like, we want to know a little bit more about Happy Birthday to You. It's the most popular song in the world, but in many ways...
Can we guess who wrote it?
What's that?
Can we guess who wrote it?
Yes, guess who wrote it?
Barry Manilow.
No one.
Michael Jackson.
No one wrote it.
Scott Joplin.
That Beethoven.
One of the most mystifying things is that no one knows exactly who
wrote
it.
Well, I have a quick question. You mentioned that the title was Happy Birthday to You.
Yes.
I always refer to it as Happy Birthday. Is that
it's interchangeable. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, since no one wrote it, no one knows the right title.
So the story of who wrote it, I'll keep it short, is two sisters in Kentucky in the 1800s wrote the melody.
Oh, those two sisters.
Mildred and Patty Hill. They wrote
Dear Abby and Ann Landers?
Nope. They called it Good Morning to You. It was a song that kindergarten teachers sang
Good
to their students.
Good morning to you.
Somewhere along the line in the early 1920s, 1930s, the lyrics were put to that melody, but no one knows by who. And then,
can I just explain one thing, though,
sure,
to the two dead sisters in Kentucky?
Yeah.
Good Morning to You is much more marketable than Happy Birthday to You, because Good Morning is something you could sing every day.
365 days.
You can only have a birthday once a year. Yeah.
Anyway.
That was a bad, bad decision.
That's true. But anyway, so after a long line of lawsuits and kind of the song's rights changing hands several times, now Warner Brothers Music owns
really? How do they own it if it was written in 1800?
It ended up in Warner's hands.
See, I was going to guess that Apple owned it, and that's why you can't see it on the air.
No. But so
I heard that like Paul McCartney owned it for a while.
Yeah,
and Michael Jackson owned it for a while.
So that's a popular rumor that Paul McCartney owned it because he snatched up a lot of musicians' catalog rights when he lost his own Beatles song, which is like a whole other.
That's a weird. How do you lose your own song?
Michael Jackson
that doesn't seem fair.
All the Beatles songs.
Yeah, anyway, that's even weirder.
So anyway.
It's weird that Paul McCartney could not own his own songs, and even weirder that Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Sorry, Paul,
I don't have the Beatles
you can't
song,
sing
so.
That one.
Why can't I sing it legally.
Okay, so here we go. Here's the story. So if you sing it in public, since that's technically like reproducing, you know, the song for public consumption, then you have to pay a royalty to Warner.
If you,
so that's,
you know,
you any, never,
every time you sing it in a restaurant or at your house around the kitchen
exactly
table,
right.
you
so
have
at
to
a
pay.
Restaurant, because that's in public, and it's why you never hear it in movies or TV shows.
Really?
Because, yeah, and so that's why restaurants like Bennigan's or, you know, Chili's or whoever creates their own weird.
Oh yeah, with
songs.
The clapping.
Happy birthday!
Yeah.
This scares me that they know this.
Oh, I'm so excited! Here comes my burger!
Here it comes.
So anyway, so that's it's entirely perplexing. So you would get away with it if you're in the privacy of your own home, probably.
But you know, when Google has their system in place where they can see and hear everything you do,
that's true.
That's going to be. I'm going to buy up the rights to this song.
So it is still under Warner's hold until 2030. So we have 15 years of kind of...
Of suffering
until we can just sing it to our heart's content.
And it becomes public domain. And we all own Happy Birthday.
Wow.
Thank God. Freedom will reign.
But anyway, can we just... I'd just like to take a second to button this up. Just, again, why is everyone searching for the lyrics?
I want to thank menshealth.com. for exploring this very, very important
topic. It's hard-hitting stuff.
Vital issue of today.
Yeah. The problem is, how do you ever decide when is the right day to run this story? It's not, you know, Valentine's Day, there's a day. Christmas Day, there's a day. Every day is somebody's birthday.
Listen,
so are you going
right,
to run this tomorrow
go.
Or tomorrow or tomorrow?
Oh,
tomorrow.
We dropped it on the Facebook birthday.
Oh, is that when you?
Yeah.
Wow. And so Facebook is how old?
11 years
or something is 2004.
Could we talk about? We're going to go to a break, but when we come back, could we talk about the horrors of Facebook on the average
the horrors.
Person's life?
You said the horrors, right?
Horrors.
Oh, not the one with the
well,
W.
Well, there's probably okay. ones with W's too,
yeah.
but I was talking about
just
the horrors.
Making sure.
The horrors.
We'll
of
talk
Facebook.
About both of them.
Let's talk about both of them when we come back. This is Men's Health Live. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Allie, Bridgestone Innovation Engineer, and I hate flat tires. They never come at a good time. You know, they don't ask, hey, you cool with getting stuck on the side of the road right now? I mean, I've got important stuff to do. I can't get stuck. I've got to keep going. That's why we engineered our new DriveGuard tire to take a puncture and keep driving up to 50 miles at up to 50 miles per hour. So now if I get a flat, I can keep my cool and keep going. Bridgestone DriveGuard. Continue your journey.
All right, before the break, we decided we were going to talk about the horrors, that's H-O-R-R-O-R-S.
I'm still hearing
not the
it with
W
the
word.
W. I'm still hearing it that way.
Well, you have
the
selective
more you
hearing.
Try not to.
You're hearing what you want to hear.
Or so I spent too much time on Facebook.
We're talking about the horrors of Facebook, which just celebrated its 10th, 11th, 12th year.
Whatever, somewhere
yeah, something
in that.
Like that.
Okay, so it just celebrated
I think
its
it was 11,
day.
Yeah.
And so there's one guy in the room. Well, first of all, a raise of hands. Who is an active Facebook user?
I have an addiction with it.
Do you really?
I overshare on Facebook.
Really?
There,
you
too
of all
many
people.
Things. In the terms
that.
Of the birth of my child, I shared everything but my wife's wide open thingadoodle. I
you,
can just
you
short.
When are you sharing
that? Instagram, though, right? You
say
that
oh, yeah, I saved that for it. That was really where it is. I tweeted it out like.
So
yes.
So you are you use Facebook a lot.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I go back and forth between like this is a great way of staying in touch with people who I have no more contact with, and then on other days going like, why did this woman I slept with in 1994 just like my baby photo? That seems weird. That seems very odd that's – and I'm encouraging that. And then my wife goes, who's that?
Nobody.
She had a tramp stamp in 94. That's all I remember.
So could you give us five really good examples of where you overshared?
Really good examples.
All right, you can make it seven.
How about 10?
10. 10's good.
Well, say here's an example. Say like you're at staying at a friend's house, a fabulous gay couple who have a mink stole, and you wake up and you're like, hey, sweetie, will you take I'm gonna take my shirt off and wear this mink stole and take a photo of it, and then you put that on Facebook, and then like you look at it later and go, that was a terrible idea.
Did this really happen?
That was a really shirtless. Oh yeah.
But what does the fabulous gay couple part have to do with it?
because I was trying to. It doesn't have a part to do with it. Other than
see how he overshares.
They're the kind of people who would have a mink school.
I see. Okay.
Suddenly, Eric has like, 200 friend requests just to take a look.
And
at this
the internet is just broken from people looking from the picture
it's
for
not
the picture.
Break anything. I'm gonna see if I can find it. But it keep talking about
it's definitely
it.
Interesting.
So you have nine more.
You mentioned the word obsess or addicted to, and you know, there are the light users, right? But more often it seems, at least in the conversations I have, it's people who are checking this stuff multiple times an hour.
Yeah, yes.
This is your experience with it?
No.
Okay. He wants to keep his job, Paul.
I have friends who do that, though. Mm. I have actually celebrity friends who I shan't be naming, but who are like, why are you, you're like on here 8-9 times a day?
Could you
like,
share you really their names, Mr. Oversharer?
I mean, I've witnessed...
I have seen the picture. I have. Let's not gonna see that again.
Boy.
Let's see that. Oh my God!
No. We're gonna get a glimpse. That's not going on.
But Mr. Oversharer, could you share the celebrity name so we can all follow them too?
No.
I just
want to
comment on that photo quickly. It is difficult for me to tell where the
Elvis
mink
first.
Ends
and where my fabulous chest hair begins.
That's what you're all missing.
That's the kind of thing that you do. You shouldn't have to wonder after you've put it on Facebook. Like that. Yeah, I've opened up a discussion about whether or not I should.
Now, have there ever been consequences of you oversharing? Negative consequences?
No.
Do you think anybody cares?
It's not like
damaged.
It's not like what I do for a living is that radically different than what I like. If I was an accountant or something, and then I made ball jokes on Facebook, that would probably put myself.
Yeah,
in
because
jeopardy,
this is one of the only jobs in the world where you could actually write about the time that you tried on your gay friend's mink.
Exactly.
And it would probably do gangbusters for.
By the way, this couple, they got married 2 days ago.
Ooh, really?
So,
was one of them wearing
Boyd
the mink?
No, because they have good taste.
In what state did they get married?
Florida.
In Florida. Yeah. Huh. Were you invited to the wedding?
Were you ever invited back after
you took the photo and the mink and put it up on Facebook?
This is a whole story.
Wait. And when you put the photo up of you and the mink, it's your fabulous gay couple's
gay
friends. I don't know. Did you also include their names and address?
In what?
In the phone with the post?
Oh, absolutely
the
not.
Oh, okay. So you were discreet about your fabulous gay friends. Just not about
except
your hairy chest and the mink.
Except on podcasts.
Oh, okay.
Which I tend to share everything. I do see it as a downside. I check it maybe an update maybe once every couple of days, and that feels like too much.
That
to me feels like, hey, it's a Wednesday and I'm having that fourth glass of wine. It just seems a little bit at work. I don't know. It just seems like why? And sometimes when you find yourself thinking too hard about like this update should be clever. Like why should this update be clever?
I think that you're an exception to. I mean, once a week or every now and then. Like I've been in conversations where if there's a lull, people will get out their phone and check Facebook.
Right.
Like
it's almost like.
It's habitual at this point.
But you know what? Single people do this the same thing with Match and dating things, too. It's really weird. I've been married a long time, so it's really weird to be watching. You're having a conversation with someone who's single. The ADD moment pops in. They're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're responding to somebody who's, at the bar next door, and then they're gone.
Right, yeah.
So, Andrew, you're on Facebook all the time.
Yeah, sounds like it.
What's your frequency?
At least once an hour.
At least once an hour.
Yeah, I'm not.
Really?
I'm not
at work?
Sure.
We're asked to be on.
Yeah,
Facebook.
And here comes the job application.
But I'm probably. Yeah.
Here comes the resumes.
I'm probably checking my feed. Yeah, at least probably once or twice an hour. Now I will say the exception to that is when I do post something. Like last night, I had this really great, inspiring. Facebook conversation with all my friends. Long story short, there's this big list.
Okay, save it.
Okay.
For after the break. We're going to take a break. More on Facebook. We're also going to find out from Paul, who does not have a Facebook account, why it's killing you and ruining your life at the same time. This is Men's Health Live. We'll be right back.
The Craftsman C3 19.2-volt 3-speed impact driver boasts 3 user-selectable speeds to help you get your project done right. The low-speed setting helps with projects that require precise control. Medium speed prevents overdriving, and the high speed will give you the power and speed to get the job done fast. delivering up to 3,500 impacts per minute and over 1,600 inch-pounds of torque. Craftsman, made to make. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores.
Well, welcome back to Men's Health Live. We're the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine and menshealth.com. You can, of course, well, you are listening to us on terrestrial radio, or you're not. If you're not, you're listening to us on your favorite digital platform. And just know that you can go to menshealth.com/radio or iTunes or TuneIn or iHeartRadio or
Twitter.
And we're on Twitter.
And
you can hear
Twitter.
Archives of our show,
yes.
Because why would you want to spend your life doing anything else but listening to Men's Health Live while checking your Facebook status and feed?
Hey, Greg, is it possible that we could come to people's houses?
Yeah, sure.
In a mink stole?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you already took that one, so we're going to have to look for other clothing to wear.
I think it's more surprising if you open your door and it's like, hey, it's the gang from Men's Health Live. Oh, you want me to put a shirt on? Whatever.
Matching.
Weird.
We'll all have matching stoles. We'll look like a weird mariachi band or something.
So before the break, we were talking about Eric oversharing on Facebook.
Yes.
And then we found out that Andrew you didn't say you overshare, but you share more.
Sure, okay.
And much more frequently.
Listen, here's why I love Facebook. Because the other night I came across this definitive ranking of every single Billy Joel song record.
Wow.
And so I...
How many is that?
121. So I
was
going to
say three.
I was going to say three, too.
My parents...
Piano Man. And I don't
can't
think of two more.
And you feel your life slowly ticking away. Like,
so listen.
The three ranking was the Billy Joel songs that matter.
Get out of here.
Wow.
My parents raised me to worship at the altar of Billy Joel. So
yes. Really?
Here is the problem.
So anyway, so I came across
this. Is this the parental abuse show? I didn't realize that was a theme. Are you an innocent man?
Let him explain himself.
I came across this list and I shared it with Glee. And before
you mean the whole show, the whole cast?
What's that?
The whole cast of Glee?
Yes, with the cast of Glee. I called up Leah Michelle.
Just check.
What do you guys think about this list?
Nice.
But all my friends chipped in. I said, you know, this is a nice list. I mean, it's impossible with a long list like this, but here's my own top 10. And then everyone, including my bosses here, chimed in on the comment thread and with their own picks for the best Billy Joel songs. This is why I love Facebook, because everyone's got an opinion on something.
Right.
And when it's something as kind of like fun and open-ended like that, it can be really great. So to get back
to... Did you feel somehow... like a master of the universe or something for creating that little ripple in the universe?
I kind of did. I was sort of the curator of this like really great conversation about the best artist of our time. And
Billy Joel.
Right. I'm just kidding about that. But anyway, back to the point of checking all the time. When you post something like that and when you know that the discussion is coming, yes, I checked it like probably 10 times an hour to see like if people were contributing.
Define discussion, because most of the Facebook comments I read are like,
listen,
looks awesome.
No, these are pretty constructive. I'll bring it up right now. You guys vamp real quick while I bring it up. It's
I want to make a confession here.
Yes.
I would have no idea how to pull Facebook up on my phone.
Really?
I'm guessing there's an app.
That's a good thing.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, the host of...
That's not a confession.
I just,
like saying,
I just went
I'm
into
not
Twitter
really sure
and turned
how
off
to,
all the notifications on my
phone.
How do
you do cocaine? I'm not sure. Do you make lines? I don't know. You're a better person for that. I think you're fine.
Well, you guys both pulled out your phones and went right to Facebook and knew how to navigate.
There are moments for me where it's very meaningful. Like 2-3 weeks ago, an old friend from Chicago in the improv community passed away suddenly. And, comedians are from L.A. to New York, all of a sudden we're talking to each other on Facebook and sharing stories and old pictures. And it was like the best way of grieving possible because I wouldn't even – I haven't talked to this guy in 10 years or most of these old Chicago people. But, when he passed, suddenly everyone is just having this very organic – sweet reconnection.
And that's
so I don't mean to rain on what you just said, and I understand that was a heartfelt sentiment.
Right.
But I've also noticed that like when somebody young dies stupidly,
right,
the comments are
stupid.
They're worse than stupid. They're
You mean like somebody famous?
Rip,
or somebody,
dude.
Yeah.
You mean like a celebrity dies?
A friend of yours dies from an overdose or a car accident or doing something stupid. And then I'm always amazed at how clueless the comments are that, you know, death is not, it's not like in the movies, you don't get to come back. It's not a high fiver.
I think people have always been that stupid. The internet just highlights.
You're saying, well,
that may be.
You're saying the comments sort of trivialize someone's death. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I think we're touching on two sides of Facebook here, and one seems to be this kind of interaction, this cross national, cross global getting together and providing some valuable content around emotional topics, whether that's death or Billy Joel. but then there's
what else is there really?
Yeah, then
that's the spectrum. Yeah. Death, Billy Joel.
The other side of it is just all of the trivial, mundane, useless.
And that's the reason that you hate it,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And not only do I dislike, but I think, and research will back me up on this, is actually bad for you.
Mm. How so? Emotionally, well, physically.
So first I'll start with personal anecdote. Okay, one of my ex-girlfriends and I, we would never really fight except about Facebook.
Wow.
And the reason was, I was still friends, as she was, with some of her exes, and we would talk about interactions that would occur that were out of my hands. Something as simple as a like. I used to have Facebook. I no longer do. This wasn't the only thing that made me get
rid of it. Did you actually kill it? I mean, did you delete your account or just stop using it?
Yeah. But we were having fights about things that were ultimately out of our control, right? What was in my control is that I could shut off these connections that I had, much like she could, and provide closure to both of us as a couple.
But this was really not a Facebook problem. This was a relationship problem.
Yes, but Facebook made it worse.
Okay.
Okay.
How so?
Well, you know what? A really hot guy next door who was a weight trainer might have made it worse too.
Yeah, but
I'm throwing an example out.
I know what you're saying, but this is like if there were 8 really hot weight trainers next door. You know, like the fact that all of these lines of communication are still open poses a danger. And I think for a person who is trying to build a concrete relationship, to have those lines of communication open,
That the relationship was doomed even if there was no Facebook, because you guys were not in sync about those relationships.
But this was the only thing we really fought about, which to me was interesting. And I think a signal of the fact that, you know, people keep these lines of communication open. Do you really need to be friends with your buddy from fourth grade that you haven't talked to in 22 years?
Maybe.
Or when you look at that connection, are you like, and this is what research is finding, man, it's been so long since I've talked to that person. What could I ever possibly say?
Wait, who was the guy in this room? I don't remember who it was. This is an honest question. Who was the guy who said, I could get together with my friend from the fourth grade and we could hang out for the entire day and I don't even know what he does for a living?
That was me.
Oh, well, okay.
That's my theory on – right.
So, I mean –
But guys don't – yeah, I mean, that's a whole other discussion, but guys don't really need that intimacy. And that was kind of my theory, but –
So research is
– So does it exist if it only exists in Facebook, or is it an illusion of friendship?
That's an interesting question.
Hold that thought. Yeah. Let's take a break.
Back to Billy Joel.
When we come back, more about Facebook, how it is either enriching your life because you get to show off what you look like in drag and a mink wrapped around your body, or how it destroys your relationship.
Don't knock until you try it.
Don't knock it. Who said I didn't try it? This is Men's Health Live. We're the guys from Men's Health Magazine.
The 2015 Dodge Challenger SRT Hellcat features a supercharged engine that delivers a whopping 707 horsepower, making it the fastest and most powerful muscle car ever. And with its iconic styling, power, and attitude, Dodge Hellcat SRT has everything a driver could want. And the passengers? Well, there's that little handle above the window. Born Dodge. Challenger based on Ward Specialty Segment and Car and Driver Quarter Mile Time. Dodge is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC. This is Men's Health Live from Men's Health Magazine. Here are your hosts, Peter Moore and Greg Stebbin.
So we're here at Men's Health Live, Men's Health Magazine, menshealth.com. Are we trashing Facebook?
No, don't trash Facebook. That's like,
That's like that's dangerous because then you get kicked out.
You could get kicked out.
I think you could. Really? I think they could ban you, and then how will I see my own baby?
Facebook sucks. I can say that because I don't have an account because I willingly decided to delete it.
So do you really believe that everything
instantly improved?
Do you really believe that when you deleted your account, everything went away?
Well, I'm no longer with that girlfriend, but
I meant everything on Facebook, not everything in your life.
I need more examples besides the relationship one. Facebook is a bad idea.
Absolutely. And in fact, I will back it up with cold, hard data.
Data.
Whoa.
Okay. So numbers. maybe some of you have heard the term FOMO.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Fear of missing out.
Yes.
For a while, FOMO. This was sort of circulating.
By the way, can I just interrupt for a sec?
Yeah.
This FOMO is a very good thing. It's a wonderful thing. You should always fear that you're going to miss out on something really important on Men's Health Live and in the every page of Men's Health. So never miss anything from Men's Health. Listen to every minute of this show. Send it to your friends. Pick up the magazine. Read every word. That way you'll never – you can go to iTunes. You can go to menshealth.com/radio. You can go to TuneIn.
I'm sorry, Greg.
Do not miss out.
Greg, I totally missed that. I was checking my email and Facebook. Can you say that one more time?
You missed out, dude.
You said something very –
You totally missed out.
Sorry.
So FOMO, fear of missing out.
Yes, okay. Scientists are actually discovering that this is a very real thing. For those of you who are unfamiliar, fear of missing out is basically you go online, you see all the awesome things that your friends
everybody
are
else
doing,
is doing,
and you're sitting at home checking Facebook.
All right.
By the way, big L over your forehead, loser.
Yeah, exactly. This makes you feel like less of a person is basically what scientists are finding. They're finding
that's because you are less of a person.
No, you're totally normal. People do all the mundane things that you do too. You know,
do you realize while you sit home and read a book, all of your friends are having an orgy, and they forgot to invite you.
Is this a problem?
That's okay.
You are reading Steinbeck, and all your friends are having an orgy. You are reading 50 Shades of Grey, and all your friends are living it.
I want to debate
that's
this,
the fear of missing out.
I could see this being a problem for teenagers or people even in their early 20s. But as an adult, what I see on Facebook are people celebrating good things and also like, hey, I just found out today I have breast cancer. I mean, there's the good and the bad. And sure. I don't look at the good and go, shoot, I'm not like them any more than I look at the bad and go, ha-ha, I don't have breast cancer.
You're exactly right. Okay, researchers are finding that FOMO occurs most often, is most detrimental in people who are aged 30 or less. And here is the problem, okay? When you are feeling FOMO, researchers have actually found that you are more likely to check your phone more often and more likely to do so in potentially dangerous situations. You're more likely to text when you drive, which, as we know, is one of the stupidest things you can do.
Literally.
Because if you die...
The other stupid thing you can do is to put on your gay friend's mink and put it up on Facebook.
No one ever died from wearing a mink.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be serious about this, texting and driving is one of the dumbest ways you can die, and FOMO increases your likelihood of.
So you mean it literally drives people it overrides their common sense.
Exactly.
Wow.
So and this just isn't Facebook. You know, it's Twitter, it's Instagram, which is particularly conducive to FOMO because on Facebook you're kind of giving your daily updates. Instagram is like, I'm on this awesome vacation. I'm seeing this awesome concert. You're not often exposed to the more mundane stuff. Here's another reason why if you delete Facebook, you may actually improve your relationship with your significant other. Okay. And what's crazy about this is usually a smartphone thing. I'm sure a lot of people have experienced this. You go out on a date maybe, or even you're out with some friends. Even I'm looking around at the table here. Everybody has their devices out on the table, right?
I have two devices.
Yeah,
on the
it's
table.
An omnipresent thing that's always there. Now, in relationships, a 2012 study found that just putting the phone on the table, not even using the phone, couples who do that regularly report a lower quality of their relationship and less trust in that relationship.
So, if I sit down at a restaurant table with my wife and put a condom on the table.
Oh man, I think you're gonna have Craig a whole different set.
All you do is think about sex.
Yeah,
all the time.
Seriously,
all the time.
Yeah.
I'm not apologizing for
during the break.
I'm not apologizing for that.
Is there
something you could set on the table? I mean, I was actually trying to make a serious point, believe it or not. Is there something instead of your phone that you could put on a table that would help couples bond instead of pushing them apart?
Well, how about your full undivided attention? Right, like that's ultimately what is detracting from the couple is communicating face to face, and we have these devices here where, okay, maybe I'm going to be a little less likely to share something intimate because you have 1,000 Twitter followers. Yeah, and who knows if you go to the bathroom and you publish what I just said. You know,
as Greg is checking
his phone. Yeah, Greg just checked his phone as I'm telling him. We need his undivided attention.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Is the only solution for this, though, to go cold turkey? I mean, isn't it like alcohol that, yes, you could drink, you know, 2 glasses of wine, or you could drink the freaking bottle and open another one.
Except it's very difficult.
And we're going to hit on it when we come back from the break. Great tease question there, Eric, by the way. I bet you are a good teaser on Facebook. All right, Men's Health Live. We're the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine, menshealth.com. We're talking about Facebook, good or bad. We have the evidence, I think. We'll be right back.
Are you stressed, depressed, isolated, or even angry? There's no need to struggle alone in the darkness anymore. Patriot Outreach is an organization lending support to our warriors, veterans, and their families who suffer from the effects of post-war trauma and stress. U.S. Army's Colonel Tony Monaco discovered a very private, simple, non-intrusive tool that's helped him immensely in overcoming extreme adversities, and it can help you too. It's confidential, it's effective, and it's powerful. To learn more, go to patriotoutreach.org and let the healing begin.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live from the world's best-selling men's lifestyle magazine, Men's Health.
All right, welcome back to Men's Health Live. We are the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine, menshealth.com. We do not own Facebook, but some of us do use it, except Paul.
Dang straight.
So, Eric, you were asking a question before the break.
Yes. I don't know if we all just have such addictive personalities that we have these fabulous things that I think are useful in helping us keep in touch, but we're all like freaking drunks with it. We're all like, I got to finish all the booze in the house.
Yeah. Like, it's the new smoking, right? Everybody like checks their phone compulsively.
The new smoking. That's an interesting way to put it. Is there any hope for it? I mean, do you have to become like a vegan with technology, or can you, you know, learn how to get better at it? Because I feel with a lot of technology, some of it's my job, but some of it's, you know, there are moments like, you know, enjoying a movie with my wife. Oh, wait, I got the little beep. Like, why the hell am I checking my phone?
You know, in the research we published in Men's Health, and actually I worked on a story about this a while back, is that when it becomes a compulsion, when you're checking it, you know, it multiple times in a day, or you're in an experience and you find yourself checking your phone
because you're not actually living your life.
Exactly. And the crazy thing is that these types of constant updates hijack our brain. And I'm sure everybody has experienced this moment where they get out their phone, they want to do something, right? Oh, I got to text my friend. And all of a sudden, like 15 minutes later, you've like checked Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, and then you're like, man, what was I supposed
to do? Don't forget ESPN.
Exactly. Your brain
loves these.
Yeah, they love these your brain loves bite-sized tasks that it can accomplish quickly. To them, to your brain, checking Twitter is a task that it can check off and move on to the next thing. It's an instant gratification.
Yeah.
Wow.
So somebody please rebuttal me and tell me why I should have Facebook, and if I don't have Facebook, I should die.
Yeah, well, so let me throw in one. I mean, because just as there's a lot of negative Facebook research, there is some positive research about Facebook.
Funded, by the way, by Facebook.
Yeah, right. The study was sponsored by Facebook. But I just I brought it up here while we were talking, because I remember last year I was editing this story. And researchers from the University of California last year found that if you follow positive people, it'll make you in turn feel more positive. So the more positive statuses maybe you encounter in your Facebook feed, the better you'll feel, and you can spread good vibes too. In fact, each happy status you post triggers an additional 1.75 positive posts among your buddies. Huh. So it's sort of kind of like a pay it
forward. So it's like in real life, get rid of the toxic people and surround yourself with positive people.
That was the ultimate, you know, takeaway from this story, and maybe something you can sort of apply to your own, you know, if you hate Facebook or if you're considering quitting, maybe filter out the toxic friends from your feed. Maybe focus on only positive things, or, you know, eliminate some.
And if somebody posts something negative, you can just threaten to kill them.
Exactly.
I've done that. I'm not threatened to kill them. I've gotten rid of people who are just like,
I've killed
a man. I'm not gonna, this is a weird way to make that
I only like positive posts, and you're negative, so I'm going to kill
you. So listen, after this, I'm going to get a new identity. I'm just going to disappear. It's been great work with you guys, but yeah, I killed a guy in cold blood. I've gotten rid of guys, specifically guys who come on and say horrible. Like, I have different political opinions, but when you start saying things that sound like hate speech, I'm not even like there's. I'm not going to be lured into any political argument because, right. Yeah. Oh yes, you think we need more guns. That's yeah. Then like let's just stop talking because there's no way I'm going to convince you. You know, from religion to politics, it's just anybody who posts something that seems to be going like I dare you to tell me differently. It's like no, bye bye. That's made my life better.
Facebook's like one big Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Where
yes,
you don't
is.
You shouldn't talk about certain
uncle.
Things.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being gay, but
you could have a great intellectual dialogue with someone on Facebook.
Yeah.
What was number one with Billy Joel?
Oh well, okay, so
Piano Man.
Best ranked it.
Piano Man.
Italian restaurant, which is nice. It's fine. It's in my top 10. Right. My personal favorite Billy Joel song is The Longest Time. If you say goodbye to me tonight, you know that one. Anyway.
Sorry, I just fell asleep.
Hey, come on. I'll stack Billy up to Bruce any day.
Oh. Okay, next segment. Let's do it.
Next week on Men's Health Live.
Unlike Defriended.
All right, so are we done with our Facebook?
I think we learned a lot today.
Yes, we did. I believe we learned a lot.
Did anybody's mind get changed?
I'm still grappling with how to have a healthy relationship with Facebook because I don't feel like I have a healthy relationship, and I do. It's a time killer, and like the Billy Joel stuff makes me want to get on Facebook more often.
Yeah.
But then some of the stuff you bring up, Paul, makes me go like, that is kind of toxic. I mean, there's it's like when you have that first glass of wine and you don't feel that good after the fourth.
Everything in moderation, including Facebook.
Including Facebook. All right. We're Men's Health Live, the guys from Men's Health Magazine and menshealth.com. The news is coming up next. When we come back, how to be a great husband this Valentine's Day. We're going to talk about your watch and how it's going to start monitoring your health and more great stuff like that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This is Men's Health Live from Men's Health Magazine.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live. We're the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine and menshealth.com. And guys, if you haven't been looking at your phone and looking at the calendar part, if you haven't set a reminder for yourself, you might not realize that in a week it will be Valentine's Day. And if you are the guy who didn't realize that, first of all, you owe us a big thank you for reminding you because you still have time to rectify the situation. But the other thing is you might want to check out a new book that just came out called How to Be a Husband, because part of being a husband is remembering Valentine's Day before Valentine's Day. And the author of that book, Tim Dowling, is here. Hey, Tim, welcome to Men's Health Live.
Thanks for having me.
So you
Greg, as a clarifying point, what day does Valentine's Day fall on this year? Is it different than it is usually?
Peter, you should pick up Tim's book real quick. I believe, I may be wrong about this, but I believe that Valentine's Day is always on February 14th.
That's right. It's not a movable feast. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Tim knew that because he knows how to be a husband, or at least he wrote a book with that title. Tim, welcome to the show. So you have written a book called How to Be a Husband, and I guess there's part of me that wants to say, you arrogant SOS, what gives you that right?
Well, I left all the adjectives out. It's not called How to Be a Good Husband or How to Be a Better Husband or anything like that. It's just about hanging in there.
So if your wife was here, what adjective would she use for you?
Oh, she's got a list. Well, she prefers to list positive attributes and then say no when she's listing the attributes. She says, let's see, Engaging? No. Thoughtful? No. She can go through a whole list like that.
And the one that does apply to you, Tim, is current, right?
Hmm? Current wife.
You are her current husband, so she's got an investment in you.
Yes, we're talking about the present Mrs. Dowling.
Yeah, there you go. So when a guy sits down to write a book called How to Be a Husband, I mean, first of all, you must have had an idea for this. And how do you even conceive that you are the guy to write this book, other than the fact that you are a husband?
To be honest, in the first instance, I was asked to write a book called How to Be a Man, and someone sent me an email, and I had to send an email back saying, I'm sorry, I don't know anything about that. and then I just suddenly figured that I am a husband. You know, you can't take that away from me because I have paperwork and stuff.
Yeah, you said I do.
You know, I said I do. I have the two copies of the certificate safely filed somewhere in case I need them.
And I'm guessing it's no accident that this book came out just over a week before Valentine's Day. That's not a coincidence, right? I mean, someone planned it this way.
These are not my strategies, but I'm sure there was a little bit of planning that went on there.
And so, you know, you have now set yourself up. We have to ask, you know,
absolutely.
What do you know about Valentine's Day that we do not?
Well, I mean, the one thing that I would say is if you are married, especially if you've been married for some time, do not go out on Valentine's Day. Stay home. Valentine's Day is amateur night. The last place you want to be is in a restaurant surrounded by people with soggy little hearts exchanging roses.
Stay you know, it's
home,
interesting.
Do something nice. Book a table for the 13th. Restaurant will be empty.
And drink so much that you're still there on the 14th.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny.
You take the table away from me.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Tim, because actually in this month's issue of Men's Health, we talk about exactly that. I mean, one of the things we say is, don't go out to dinner on Valentine's Day. Actually go do something completely unpredictable. You know, we suggest in the article, go play miniature golf together or go play some skee ball or something. Do something completely absurd and unpredictable because, you know, as you're saying here, I mean, if you're going out to dinner on Valentine's Day, all you really did prove was that you actually have no imagination at all or you didn't care enough to think about it very much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to destroy an industry here, but I can't think of anything more depressing than being in a restaurant on Valentine's Day, surrounded by people who are doing the exact same thing. That sort of Valentine's Day had this tendency to feel like a terrible sort of obligation. And if you can't find a way around that, it's going to make you feel worse, not better.
So how would
that's a good idea. I agree with you. Go, you know, go maybe not sort of paragliding. Nothing risky.
Well, there is the risk if you're playing miniature golf that you may lose. But for that, we even came up with a win, which was, you know, if you're dating, forget married, but if you're dating and you lose at miniature golf or skee ball on Valentine's Day, now you have a good reason to plan a second date because you can ask for a rematch.
You want your own back, yeah. Put a little money on it. Then you have to have a second date.
So this idea of not having dinner on Valentine's Day, and we're talking with Tim Dowling. His new book, How to Be a Husband, just came out. So it's a great idea, guys, to read this before Valentine's Day to make sure you get it right. And ladies, if you're not sure if your guy, well, if you are sure that he's clueless, it might be a good gift for him. But how does a woman give this book to a man on Valentine's Day without offending him?
Well, I mean, I think you really have only got to read a couple of pages in to see that the book is largely, it's partly a memoir, and it is largely designed to make people feel better about their marriages by using mine as a terrible example.
And plus, I, reading the book as I have, the way I see it is that Tim is very willing to confess how ineffectual most men are at the institution of marriage, that it's kind of something that's trumped up for the benefit of women, and that men kind of drift along in it, you know, at the woman's say-so. So, you know, we're all suffering together is one of the messages that I took from Tim's book.
We're talking with Tim Dowling. He wrote the book, How to Be a Husband. It just came out. Great idea, guys, to read this before Valentine's Day. Ladies, a great gift for the guy in your life. Tim, when we come back, I actually want to talk about a story you wrote for Men's Health way back in 1997 called Easy Answers to Her Trickiest Questions. Stuff like, how do I respond when she says, have you taken a look at yourself lately? Ouch, that's harsh. Tim Dowling, his new book, How to Be a Husband. This is Men's Health Live. We'll be right back.
Uh-oh.
Barrett Jackson, the world's greatest collector car auction, returns to South Florida Fairgrounds in Palm Beach, Florida, April 17th through the 19th. Hundreds of amazing vehicles will once again cross the auction block. Be a part of the three-day lifestyle event and the energy that is Barrett Jackson. That's April 17th through the 19th at the beautiful sunny South Florida Fairgrounds. Tickets are available at Barrett-Jackson.com. That's Barrett-Jackson.com.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live from the world's best-selling men's lifestyle magazine, Men's Health.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live. We're talking with Tim Dowling, who has a new book out called How to Be a Husband. Yes, guys, if you're married, this might be a smart thing for you to pick up between now and Valentine's Day, especially if you forgot that Valentine's Day is now a week away. Ladies, it's a good-humored look at how to be a husband, so it might be a great gift for you to give your husband or your guy on Valentine's Day. Tim, we were talking before the break about a story you wrote for Men's Health way back in 1997 called Easy Answers to Her Trickiest Questions. Questions like, have you taken a look at yourself lately? Ouch, that hurts. What do you remember about that story?
I remember very little. I remember needing money. I certainly don't remember the answer to that tricky question. I hope it's not really wildly sexist.
You know what? Part of the reason why you're on the show today, Tim, was that I was at Men's Health Magazine in 1997, and I had such happy memories of that terrific piece because, you know, again, like your book does, it reminds us that that we are all brothers in this reaction that we need to have to the women in our lives. And the fact is that they're going to ask us those tricky questions and stand by with their arms folded across their chest, waiting for us to implicate ourselves in a negative way with whatever answer we come up with.
Yeah. Well, my wife does that thing where she asks me questions and then says, why don't you just, she watches me flounder for a while and she says, why don't you just admit you're wrong or you don't know?
Is she a lawyer by day?
No. I wish. No, I'd quit.
No. Greg, you make a very good point there, though. Aren't women all lawyers? Like, isn't cross-examination their major skill in life? And we are all under that withering cross-examination, and they're just waiting for us to trip over ourselves, and we can't take the Fifth Amendment because this is a relationship.
Yeah, I have no defense either. The only defensive move I have is the pretense to wounded integrity. I can't believe that people are questioning my dignity and integrity this way. How dare you?
Well, and in fact, one of the questions you wrote about, and this is going back to 1997, so it's a bit unfair of us to expect you to remember what you wrote. But as Peter said, you know, these points are as valid today as they were then. And one of the questions you brought up is when a woman says to you, why don't you say something? That's the worst thing that can happen to a guy because we just don't know what to say.
It has to be all about you, doesn't it? Because it's almost impossible to make your answer not all about you.
We have a starring role in a movie and we haven't been handed the script.
That's exactly right. We're talking with Tim Dowling. He has a new book out called How to Be a Husband. What a coincidence. It's a week before Valentine's Day, and there's a new book down at your bookstore at Amazon.com called How to Be a Husband. We're talking with Tim Dowling. And Tim wrote a story for Men's Health back in 1997 called Easy Answers to Her Trickiest Questions. And Tim, you – as I was rereading the story, because I was with Men's Health back in 1997 as well, I was rereading the story and looking at the questions, and every one of them hurt. And, you know, Peter, we should actually repost the story up on the web. But it's questions like, it's the obvious ones. Do I look fat? Are you saying you want to end it? And here's the one that always terrifies me. Notice anything different about me? You cannot win with that question. Tim, thanks for joining us here at Men's Health Live. The book is How to Be a Husband. Valentine's Day is coming. It's a great gift, ladies, for your guy. Guys, you may want to pick it up. There may be some information in there that will help you, especially if
you
forgot that Valentine's Day is coming. That's absolutely right. Tim, thanks for joining us at Men's Health Live. When we come back, more great stuff from this month's issue of Men's Health Magazine.
I'm Allie, Bridgestone Innovation Engineer, and I hate flat tires. They never come at a good time. They don't ask, hey, you cool with getting stuck on the side of the road right now? I mean, I've got important stuff to do. I can't get stuck. I've got to keep going. That's why we engineered our new DriveGuard tire to take a puncture and keep driving up to 50 miles at up to 50 miles per hour. So now if I get a flat, I can keep my cool and keep going. Bridgestone DriveGuard. Continue your journey.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live. We are the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine, menshealth.com, and now we have to call ourselves the major award-winning Men's Health Magazine, menshealth.com, and Men's Health Live, because, well, I'm here with Bill Phillips. He's the editor-in-chief of Men's Health. Peter Moore, you're there, Peter, the editor of Men's Health.
That's right. We've got major editorial talent going right here, right now.
Right in this room. Big work, big week for you guys.
It was a big week. We're pretty humble, but this one's so big that even we'll brag about it a little bit.
Bill's blushing a little bit, as he says. There's red rising up through his face.
Men's Health received the National Magazine Award for General Excellence, which is the biggest award you can get in our industry. It's sort of like the Oscars for magazines, and General Excellence reflects the total magazine. Everything from the cover to the back page and excellence in our pages. So,
does it include the radio show?
It does not include the radio show. It's just sort of editorial excellence. It does include website and tablet edition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you won this award. It was the award ceremony was Monday night in New York. Where was it in New York?
Marriott Marquis, which is right in Times Square.
Okay, and there were hundreds of magazine editors and publishers there.
Yeah, the awards are put on by the American Society of Magazine Editors, or ASME, mm-hmm. And it is an industry group made up of all the major magazines and editors, publishers. It's a big event, much like the Oscars. I think 300 or 400 editors get together to judge magazines. So really, like winning an award like this, what makes it so great is it's your peers, mm-hmm. and they're validating your work. So it's completely objective, and there's 12 or 14 sitting in a room saying, is this great? Is this generally excellent? And this year we rose to the top, which, in our 27-year history, we've only ever been nominated 6 times for this award. We did win once before, about 5 years ago.
It's also important for people to realize when we're talking about awards for magazines, how many magazines there are too. It's not just a handful of magazines. I mean, there's hundreds of magazines.
Yeah. I mean, there's thousands of magazines.
Thousands of magazines.
Yeah. I think there were something like 7,000 entries this year into all the different categories. There are 24 categories. And so they are, awarding National Magazine Awards for writing, reporting, for design, photography, for websites, that sort of thing. But the big one is General Excellence.
So this is sort of like winning Best Picture.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
Okay. Physically, did you get a lump in your throat or butterflies in your stomach?
What I did was like, oh my God, I better like have some sort of speech prepared. And even though
it's going to be my next question.
Yeah. So like, even though I had some talking points in my mind, I really sort of had to put it together quickly and try to get a narrative together that would make sense, because I knew once I got on stage, if we won, and again, I wasn't like counting on it at that point or anything, because you hear things. I just wanted to make sure it was coherent. And I thanked the people I wanted to thank. So we were actually, I think, the 16th award of the night, which meant that I sat there for 2 hours worrying about it. And, I didn't want to drink too much.
Yes.
So like I was sipping one glass of wine and I don't know that I really enjoyed the first 15 awards, because I was just so focused in my mind on what I would say if it would happen.
And so you heard Men's Health.
I heard Men's Health, and the table erupted. We had a whole table of Men's Health editors there, and it was just a really great moment. To go up on stage and to be, it makes you think of your wedding day. Mm. All of a sudden, everybody was paying attention to you and wants to congratulate you, and you sort of don't know why, but it doesn't feel like you deserve it.
And you don't want it to stop.
But you don't want it to stop. Yeah. So you soak, you take it all in, and you appreciate it. You try to remain, humble, even though it is one of the most exciting things that has ever happened in your career.
Mm. Wow. So it's kind of a Cary Grant moment.
Very much so.
Yeah. And so my last question for both of you guys is, how do you guys consistently keep producing a magazine that gets that kind of response from your fellow editors and at least as important, that kind of response from readers, because Men's Health continues to dominate the world of men's magazines.
I have an answer to that, and what I would say is that we do the magazine for the right reasons. A lot of the some parts of the magazine industry feel like they're dominated by editors who are trying to amuse other editors, whereas we have had it drilled into us and have drilled it into succeeding generations of editors that everything we do at Men's Health has to benefit the readers of Men's Health. We're an utterly reader-focused magazine, and it's all about finding the tips, the strategies, the inspiration for regular guys to lead better lives. And we're among those regular guys who are trying to lead better lives. So I think having that focus outward actually brings a something special to the magazine that our, you know, that our peers in the industry recognize and reward us for.
I think Peter hits the perfect point there, which is, you know, we're readers too. So if we're not going to do the tip that we're about to put on the page for our readers, then they're not going to do it either. And we're really good at challenging each other to make it better. And, you know, the other thing I would say, and Peter hit on it too, is, you know, last year we weren't nominated for an award. And did we scramble to like change everything so we win an award this year? It's like, no, we just, you know, challenged ourselves to just be more creative and be better at what we do every day. And you know, winning this award isn't going to change us either. We're not going to sit back and think, oh, well, geez, we're great now. No, it's like this magazine has always been about the reader. It always will be about the reader. It's not about us. The awards are nice, but it's not what brings us in to the office every day.
That's pretty great stuff. Guys, congratulations. This is so it's called the American Society of Magazine Editors. The awards are called the ASMEs. You guys won the award for general excellence. And for anyone not in the magazine industry, this is sort of like winning Best Picture at the Oscars, only it's for the magazine industry. Guys, congratulations. Great work. We know that people love Men's Health because they keep buying it and they keep reading it. And as you said, that's what it's all about. Congratulations. I'm Greg Stebbin with Peter Moore, Bill Phillips. This is Men's Health Live, and we'll be right back.
The Craftsman C3 19.2 volt 3-speed impact driver boasts 3 user selectable speeds to help you get your project done right. The low speed setting helps with projects that require precise control. Medium speed prevents overdriving, and the high speed will give you the power and speed to get the job done fast, delivering up to 3,500 impacts per minute and over 1,600 inch pounds of torque. Craftsman, made to make. Available at craftsman.com, sears.com, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live. We're the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine and menshealth.com. I'm Greg Stebbin. I'm here with Peter Moore, who's the editor of Men's Health, and Paul Keita, another editor who's just an all-around good guy to have around in the radio studio with us.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you caught this, guys, but a guy named Dan in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I happen to live. Dan, you know, if you ever want to meet for a beer, just let me know. But he wrote in to Men's Health, and he said, are any of those online retirement calculators better than the rest? And I don't know about the shape of your retirements, guys, but I'm not the right guy to ask about this.
Yeah, they might as well have this question followed up by Peter Moore, Emmaus, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Because I'm hanging on every word here.
And Paul's actually young enough to take some good advice.
What is retirement?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, what Paul is overlooking across the table is like, when is that old guy going to get out here so I can shine?
He's like, so we did, as we do here at Men's Health Magazine, this is what we do when we don't know the answer to a question. We reach out to an expert. And so on the phone with us is, they call him Dr. C. His real name is Conrad Ciccatello. Dr. C, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Dr. C is the director of the Graduate Wealth Management Program in the See that? I knew I was going to blow that. Dr. C is the director of the Graduate Wealth Management Program in the Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University. And so, Dr. C, do you get asked questions like this a lot? You know, where should I go online to find the best retirement calculator?
Yes, I get asked these questions a lot. I think people, you know, kind of want to know where they are, sort of like, you know, a health checkup, but they don't really want to spend a lot of time. So those calculators are good for that.
And is this actually a good way to start planning one's retirement, using an online calculator? Can someone really carry out an effective plan by using free tools that are online?
it is better than nothing. So I think, you know,
yeah, but that's not a very high recommendation.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I like about what y'all do is you think about sort of men's health in a broad sense. So, you know, if I were having some physical problems, you know, hey, reading WebMD, for example, is better than nothing, or reading some
but
material.
But it's not as good as reading Men's Health, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, so this is really about health. And yeah, I mean, I think it's better if you go see, you know, a real MD for your health, or a financial advisor to get a better estimate. But a lot of people just won't get there, especially if they're young. I mean, they're busy and they're, you know, they're just not worried about it until maybe it's too late.
Well, let me interject here as resident young guy.
Yeah.
Dr. C, I'm 29, and retirement really to me seems like, man, that's going to be double the age of what I am now. You know, for somebody
dream
like
on,
me.
My friend, double your age?
Yeah.
Dream
who
on.
Who knows?
Hey, you know what? Until you said that, I didn't realize that I am double your age, Paul.
Yeah,
and
there we go.
You may have noticed he's not
great,
retired.
Great.
Here I am across the table from you. Right.
But Dr. C, the question is, like, you know, for younger guys who are listening out there, is this a good place to start, or is this more for people like Greg
the
and Peter?
Old guys.
If you can do this when you're young, the web calculators actually work a lot better for young people, because when you get older, you start getting a lot more moving and or cranky parts. So
now, do they work?
If you get a set of 29, that's
they
great.
Can actually see the numbers.
Well, here's why I try to motivate the younger person to think about this: is don't think about retirement, because as was just said, you get a picture of, you know, of a creaky old guy. Think of it as freedom. So you're accruing freedom every day that you are accumulating wealth. It just gives you an option on how to spend your time later. And if you don't start thinking about freedom until you're, you know, in their 40s, which is where a lot of people are, you've eliminated a lot of option value. So millennials like to think about freedom. You know, I teach undergrad. You can't sell them on, hey, you know what, start saving money now so that you can look like me. It's about, hey, save some money now so that you can do, you know, maybe work a job you really like in your 30s that maybe doesn't pay you as much, or live in this place which you really like. It's really a freedom calculator, and it's trying to quantify the balance, really, of how you live now and how you live later.
We're talking with Dr. Conrad Ciccatello. They call him Dr. C at the Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University. And he's answering a question we got from one of our readers, Dan in Raleigh, North Carolina. Dan wanted to know if there are some online retirement calculators that are better than others. And Dr. C, I want to ask you a personal question, if I can.
Sure.
My personal question is this. This is actually what you do for a living. This is your area of expertise. So of all the things that one should do when planning retirement, how much of that have you done? Are you at 100%, 90%, 60%?
Well, I think it's one thing to talk. It's another thing to walk. And, I mean, I train and educate financial advisors, and so the first thing we talk about is you're going to preach it, you better walk it. And I try my very best to walk. I mean, I'm very close to 55, and I believe we're in a position, you know, to quote unquote retire at a normal working age. But I will tell you something about retirement. A lot of people are not very happy when they do something that they thought they wanted to do their whole life, but turns out not to be what they expected. So here's again this idea of freedom. When I get to be 65, we're on track, if I want to stop, quote-unquote, working. But it may be something, you know, that I want to continue to do in my life to some extent. Maybe I don't, you know, if I'm around the house all day, my wife might, yeah, that might not be the best deal, right? So I think it really helps to think about this as a continuous process. If you build wealth, you have freedom to do things. And I may just not quit when I'm 65 just because I turned 65, but I want to have the ability and the flexibility to maybe change what I do and, you know, not do things within my life that I don't like as much. So, yes, I think you hit the nail on the head. For advisors in general, walking the walk is important, even for professors.
All right. Dr. Ciccitello, that was a great way to wrap this up. He's Dr. Conrad Ciccitello. He's from the Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for giving us that advice. This is Men's Health Live. We'll be right back.
The 2015 Dodge Challenger SRT Hellcat features a supercharged engine that delivers a whopping 707 horsepower, making it the fastest and most powerful muscle car ever. And with its iconic styling, power, and attitude, Dodge Hellcat SRT has everything a driver could want. And the passengers? Well, there's that little handle above the window. Born Dodge. Challenger based on Ward Specialty Segment and Car and Driver Quarter Mile Time. Dodge is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC. This is Men's Health Live from Men's Health Magazine. Here are your hosts, Peter Moore and Greg Stebbin.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live. We're the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine and menshealth.com. I'm Greg Stebbin. I'm here with Peter Moore, Melissa Romero, one of the editors here at Men's Health, and Paul Pita. And Melissa, before we talk about this story you wrote in Men's Health, it's a really weird story, too. It's about weird, I call it the weird doctor's visit story. But before we talk about that, Paul, you were mentioning something about a special skill that Melissa has.
Yeah, and quite frankly, it's more important than anything that you guys
is in the magazine.
Yeah, more important than doctor visit, certainly.
At the company party for Rodale, Melissa helped me serve our grilled cheese sandwiches. Thomas
now,
Keller
we should explain,
recipe.
We should explain you're the food and nutrition editor.
You got it. Yep.
So you're not just some guy talking about food.
No, and these aren't just some grilled cheese sandwiches. This is a Thomas Keller recipe.
Wow.
From Per Se, the vaunted chef there. And, we started serving these things up. Melissa was right beside me on her own flat top. And before I could even melt the butter on my griddle, she had made at least 35 sandwiches and cut them and presented them. Wow. Unbelievable.
And I will vouch that they were
good sandwiches.
But unfortunately, guys, she is taken.
To explain that? The taken part?
Well, I mean, every guy looks for an amazing grilled cheese maker.
It's grilled cheese monthly.
Yeah, Men's Health Magazine. And you wrote this really odd story, which I call weird doctor visits. And so what's the deal here?
Okay, so when you have overloaded on grilled cheese and you need to go see the doctor as a result, and
happens.
You can't get that doctor's appointment because, you know, you have to wait a month and he's all booked up or whatnot, there are other options that you can do if you are open to them.
A possibility? Could that help?
Maybe. So, there's various options for you now. So one of the really odd ones is a group visit, or the technical term, a shared medical appointment.
Wow.
They do this?
They do this.
Who has this insurance? Well, see, I'm not working there.
You've got one guy who's got an infectious sexual disease and the five women who he slept with most recently. They all go to the doctor. Is that what it is? No.
But you're serious? You share your doctor's appointment with a doctor?
Yes, a doctor, a nurse, and what they call a behaviorist. And the idea...
There are no shots in the butt during this.
There's no shots in the butt. If there are, then those are private.
You get a screen.
Yes, there's a nice screen for you to hide behind. But the way it works, it's about 10 or 15 of you. Patients.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a lot of people.
There's a lot of people.
Three is unacceptable. 10 or 15?
Yep. And so think of it almost as a mix of your average doctor's appointment as well as the group therapy.
Going to a bar.
Wait, so would everybody have present with the same symptoms, or would these be potentially 10 different problems?
Typically, some of them do present the same symptoms. A lot of times you'll find these group appointments include patients that all suffer from, diabetes, cancer.
So it's a group. Treating something together. It's like a support group.
Exactly.
Okay. So there's not one person with the flu and another person with a broken ankle, so the person with the broken ankle gets to go home with a broken ankle.
Right, no. And you don't. And if you have a broken ankle, you don't want to sit around. It's a 90-minute whole session, and they're not going to make you sit there for 90 minutes. But the idea, you do get more time with your doctor, and you get to share advice of how you're dealing with whatever condition you may have with other patients. And you're seen faster. because
so
you know
words,
there's
you can
15
get the
other
appointment
people.
This month instead of next year.
Exactly.
This sounds like a great way to meet women. Oh, you have the cold. I have the cold too.
No danger there.
Yeah.
All right. So one of the other things you talk about in this article, we're talking with Men's Health editor Melissa Romero. She wrote a story about weird doctor's visits. Let's just skip over the e-doctor visit because I think people can, you know, that it's not that big of a stretch. You can imagine. Mm-hmm. And all we're really saying is, yes, it's being done now and it's okay, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a fine way to see the doctor for appropriate problems or symptoms.
As long as you describe your symptoms accurately as possible.
Yes. So the next one that really, I'm sure people have a lot of questions is, how good is the doctor at Walgreens? If there's a doctor at Walgreens, does that mean he got his diploma at Walgreens, or is he or she really a doctor?
So, at these retail clinics, Walgreens, CVS, they actually usually don't have doctors on staff. It's more physician assistants, nurse practitioners, who can also diagnose common conditions. You know, if it's the cold, it's the flu, and they can treat it for you. Even minor injuries, that they can do that too. And it's completely the same type of service you might get at your doctor's, only it's quicker. You know, their hours, they're open longer. So if you can't make it, leave work in time.
And if there's a line at one Walgreens, there's another one around the corner.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you can go on their website, and a lot of patients have issues with not knowing how much something's going to cost. It's just, you know, a much easier, convenient way for them to go online and see, okay, this flu shot will cost this much here. I can go there and be in and out in 15 minutes.
So you know, it's okay.
Yes.
At the risk of bringing howls of protest out there from Radio Land, I would say that this penetration of medical services, like to Walgreens, to Walmart, it's exactly it's one of the things that's come out of the Affordable Care Act, is that there's so many more people who are,
they're lining,
you know,
up outside, Peter.
Well, there's 7 million more people who have health insurance now, meaning they're getting these, they need someone who can deal with them. And it's also, you know, another one of the magic words here is the physician assistant. They have great training for most of the stuff that you're going to present at the doctor for. They're not going to do, you know, operate on your brain, but if you got the sniffles, you got a sore throat, you have a mystery symptom you wonder about, a physician assistant is going to get you the help that you need. And that's why it's great to be able to have one at CVS or at Walmart or Walgreens. And I'll also note that all those places also carry Men's Health magazine. So you can pick up a copy. And we're
while
almost
you're as- waiting that short period of time for your visit, you won't be there for hours like you will at a regular doctor's.
Right. Just make sure you pay for the issue first before you go to the...
Especially before you dribble the ice cream on it.
I mean, this is one of the reasons why I hate going to the doctor, is it's a chore to get any kind of access, right? Mm-hmm. And this seems like something that I would be likely to do.
Yeah. So you're saying two thumbs up on the retail clinic, a doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want convenience and good care, there's no reason why you can't go to a retail clinic, unless, you know, you're bleeding from the head. Then go to the ER.
Gunshot wounds, no.
Yeah.
Right. And Melissa Romero, she's one of the editors here at Men's Health. She wrote the story about weird doctor visits, group visits, if you have similar symptoms, going to Walgreens or CVS when you need that kind of short-term medical care. Melissa, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks.
This is Men's Health Live. We'll be right back.
Are you stressed, depressed, isolated, or even angry? There's no need to struggle alone in the darkness anymore. Patriot Outreach is an organization lending support to our warriors, veterans, and their families who suffer from the effects of post-war trauma and stress. U.S. Army's Colonel Tony Monaco discovered a very private, simple, non-intrusive tool that's helped him immensely in overcoming extreme adversities, and it can help you too. It's confidential, it's effective, and it's powerful. To learn more, go to patriotoutreach.org and let the healing begin.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live from the world's best-selling men's lifestyle magazine, Men's Health.
Welcome back to Men's Health Live. We're the guys who bring you Men's Health Magazine and menshealth.com. So Peter and his team at Men's Health are feeling pretty good about themselves right now, given their big win at the National Magazine Awards earlier this week. Oddly enough, Peter says, this just demonstrates how important it is to fail and to fail big. Peter, I think you're going to have to explain. Take it away.
You may have heard my boss, Bill Phillips, and I pounding each other on the back earlier in the show. We're still celebrating the triumph Men's Health had in the National Magazine Awards this year as the winner of the General Excellence Award among active interest publications. MH was up against Runner's World and Women's Health, two other amazing magazines put out by our parent company, Rodale, Inc., plus Popular Mechanics and Outside. If this were a tag team wrestling, it would have been four muscular magazine behemoths against the periodical version of Katniss from The Hunger Games. As I surveyed the competition, I figured the popular mechanics would win, given the successful overhaul they gave the magazine for an era when mechanics are more popular than ever. I had already prepared my personal consolation speech. It's a win even to be nominated, blah, blah, blah. But then, at the award ceremony in NYC, when the host, David Muir of ABC's World News Tonight, cleared his throat to announce the winner, he noted that the winning magazine consistently made him feel bad about himself. That's when the goosebumps erupted. He could only be talking about Men's Health, a magazine that has helped build a superlative form of manhood since 1988. He said the name, the cover of our November issue flashed on the big screen, and our table erupted. We've been so busy congratulating ourselves since then that our celebration has been interfering with the ship of the April issue, which is, gulp, due at the printer next week. It's a major career high to be named generally excellent by a jury of your persnickety peers. In fact, I've judged the National Magazine Awards for the last 5 years in different categories, so I can attest that the two-day sorting process is a combination of 12 angry men and MMA cage fighting. Each judging room in the 18 award categories is filled with 15 or 20 top editors at the biggest magazines in the country. Each editor a seasoned pro and a world-class picky reader. Sometimes I wonder how any magazine secures a nomination, given how discerning the panel of editors is. This year, I helped judge the reporting category, and we shared a grim realization that we were choosing among genocides, murderers, and inhumanities. Which tale carried the most moral weight, the most devastating narrative? Our winner, GQ's deeply moving descent into Russia's persecuted gay subculture and the forces arrayed against it, written by Jeff Charlotte. It felt great to support a brave piece of writing and reporting and to flip the bird at Vladimir Putin and the forces of hate and prejudice at the same time. Journalism can do that in our free society. I only hope that there are bootleg copies circulating in Moscow for the comfort and support of the gay underground there. In fact, magazines can be a major civilizing voice in the world. It makes me proud to be in that business, in fact. But in the afterglow of this major success for Men's Health, I can't help but compare it to this time last year when we scanned the NatMag Award nominees and came up empty. In 2013, we expended the same effort we did last year, and no award committee saw fit to acknowledge our work. At the same time, we told ourselves that it didn't matter, that the business success of Men's Health meant we were reaching and helping more readers than ever. And so we were. But the award-seizing silence gnawed at us. What were we doing wrong? We convened a meeting of the magazine's top editors, plus the design and photo team. As a special guest, we invited Peter Flax, who at that time served as the editor-in-chief of Bicycling magazine. He had served on the ESME group, judging Magazine of the Year for 2013, so we asked him, what did it take? His answer was simple and profound. You need a narrative, he told us. What were you wrestling with in the last year, and how did you respond? It's not enough to consistently be excellent. You need to show how you manage the growth and development of your magazine brand. After he spoke those words, we proceeded to tear the magazine limb from limb for a day. Self-loathing has always been a part of our strategic plan. We killed a major section of the magazine that had lived since the start, and we invented new ones. We reorganized our major topic areas and discussed how the artwork could be improved. We reasserted our right, our duty, to speak with the voice of men, to champion men, to be unapologetic in our manliness. And through all that, we wanted to be funnier as well. According to our peers, we succeeded in 2014. But here's the lesson I take away from all this. Had it not been for the thudding silence of last year's ASME Awards, there is no way we would have risen to the heights we're enjoying right now as a generally excellent winner. In fact, we were feeling like complete failures last year at this time, barely deserving of the privilege of talking to the 24 million men who make up our audience. Yes, we were a little desperate and kind of scared. But there's a beauty in that. There's nothing like a sense of failure to sharpen your senses, boost your focus, make you work harder and more creatively. So that newly minted award on our shelf actually makes me a little nervous. With that gleam catching our eye, maybe blinding us, how can we push ourselves to get better when our peers tell us we're already pretty great? That's an easy one. We need to fail some more, and in a hurry. Failure is the rock that blocks the steep upward path to success. If I'm not tripping and straining over obstacles, I'll never stay on that path. How about you? Have you had any good failures recently? If not, you're probably just not trying hard enough.
If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time. All while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.